When you've been hunted as long as Kuno had, you've gained a heightened sense of your own back trail. Something pricked at that sense now. Had been pricking at it all morning, in fact. Kuno had ridden back to take a look, but he hadn't seen anything. Still, he couldn't relax.
You two go on ahead.
Kuno reined his horse off the trail.
I'm gonna hold back for a while.
He tossed Marlene the Arabian's ribbons.
What's the matter?
Probably nothing, but I'm gonna hang back just to make sure.
What if we get lost? I've never been through this country before.
Just keep following this game trail to that pass yonder.
Kuno slid his gaze beyond her to indicate the cleft between two rocky ridges, due north.
According to my map, on the other side there's a little mining town called Canyon City. If you don't see me in a couple of hours, head there.
When Marlene, the boy, and the Mexican's Arabian had disappeared over a low rise, their dust sifting behind them, Kuno looked around. In the east rose a low, rocky ridge, its buff sandstone pitted with shadows. In the west, a tree-carpeted mesa arched against the vast blue bowl of the mid-afternoon sky. A large hawk circled lazily over the mesa's boulder-strewn northern slope, a winged moat from this distance. At the base of the mesa's fur-covered slope, a shallow stream trickled, its sandy banks strewn with rocks and boulders. Deciding the stream bed made for good cover, he followed Sandy's and Marlene's tracks up the trail, then doubled back along the stream and dismounted. Shucking his Winchester, he tied Renegade on a narrow shelf up the mesa's steep, hidden slope. Walking back down to the stream, he hid in a nest of rocks hugging the water. He'd crouched amongst the rocks for a half hour. His heart increasing its pace, he wheeled to stare straight down the stream, meandering along the base of the mesa. Moving figures flashed between the trees, and finally six riders slipped out of the woods at the base of the mesa. One of the riders, a tall man with hair stretched back and thonged in a ponytail, was bare-chested and holding a feathered war lance. He wore only a breechcloth. His muscular, copper thighs were bare. The others were clad in combinations of buckskins and calico. One wore a white man's bowler hat over a red bandana, a bear-tooth necklace hanging down his tattered white shirt with blue pinstripes. Kuno's fingers dug into his Winchester's stock. These men were part of the group that had raided the farmstead. They'd probably returned, for the braves who'd stayed behind to kill the animals found the bodies and picked up the trail of Kuno's party. The leader led the group across the stream and up the opposite slope to the game trail that Kuno, Sandy, and Marlene had been following. They paused there, scouring the trail with their eyes, then started moving northward at a slow, purposeful pace. Kuno watched the Indians disappear up the slow rise. There was no doubt they were dogging him, and no doubt there was only one way to get them off his trail. Scrambling through the trees on the mesa's slope, he retrieved his horse, rode back down the hill, and gigged the paint north. He rode slowly, trying to make as little noise as possible. If the horse so much as blew or clipped a rock with a shod hoof, the keen-eared Indians would pick it up. The six riders appeared before him, spread out along the trail. The leader was looking left, apparently reading the sign Kuno had left when he doubled back along the stream. Anxiety tightened the back of his head, and his hands tingled. He had to take them now, before they turned around and saw him. Too late. The leader had already turned. The others jerked their heads sharply back along the trail as Kuno leapt from his saddle, slapping his horse's ass with his rifle butt.
Yeah, Renegade, move!
The horse dug its rear hooves into the sod and thundered down the slope. Meanwhile, Kuno raised the rifle to his shoulder and began firing, aiming hastily, loosing as much lead as he could before the Indians had time to notch their arrows or fling their lances. Over his smoking barrel, he saw one Indian grab his chest and tumble off his horse. Another man's forehead turned red as he too was flung from his blanket saddle. Meanwhile, the four others leapt from their mounts, twisting and turning, pivoting, notching arrows in midair. They scrambled to their knees, flicking arrows, the feathered shafts sizzling through the air around Kuno's head, tearing into the turf around his feet. As soon as they fired, their hands whipped over their shoulders, grabbing more arrows from their quivers and notching them, all in a single blink. Missing his jostling targets, Kuno bolted right, making for the rocky spur and cover as more arrows flew toward him. These Kiowa were good fighters. His odds against such formidable adversaries were slim. The thought had barely passed through his mind when he felt a sudden icy burn in his right calf. He bit down hard on his back teeth, ignoring the pain, knowing that to stop would mean getting drilled by one of the arrows pinging off the rocks on either side of him. Not looking back, squeezing his rifle tight around the breech, he ran up the slope, slipping on the loose scree. He dropped to a knee. An arrow sizzled over his left ear, nicking his cheek. It was all the encouragement he needed to heave himself back up and bolt forward around a boulder. Sitting down, he clutched the wounded calf from which the hawk-feathered shaft of an arrow extended. The steel head protruded from his torn jeans on the other side, dripping blood. He stole a look around the boulder, casting his gaze down slope. The four Kiowa were spread out, making their way up the butte, arrows notched and held down at their hips. Coal-eyed, roughly chiseled faces canted toward the boulder behind which Kuno crouched. Then he glanced up the slope behind him. There was a shelf about 20 feet up. Then the ridge rose more gradually, pocked with cracks and crevices and littered with jagged rocks and boulders. In some places, the orange soil gave way to sheer rock, but Kuno thought he could scramble over it. He had to. There was nowhere else to go. Quickly, he heaved himself out from the boulder and, crouching, took aim at the Indian wearing the bowler. The man had seen him and thrown himself right, and the shot went wild. Meanwhile, Kuno levered off the rest of the rounds in his magazine, then lowered the rifle to watch the four Kiowas scramble back down the slope, taking cover in the grass below the trail. The first part of his mission accomplished, Kuno crouched again behind the boulder, set his rifle aside, dropped to his ass, and grabbed both ends of the arrow protruding from his calf. Grinding his teeth together, he snapped the arrow in two and pulled the feathered end from his leg. Fortunately, it was a clean wound, missing the bone, and he was able to stem the flood of blow with his neckerchief, knotted 4 inches above his ankle. That done, he reloaded his rifle from his cartridge belt and cast a glance back down the rock-strewn butte. The four Kiowa were vague, coppery blurs in the high weeds on the other side of the trail. One was moving to Kuno's right, apparently swinging wide to approach the butte from a greater angle. Holding the Indians at bay, he pivoted and ran out from behind the boulder and scrambled up the butte, grabbing at rocks with his hands and feet. Kuno heard them scrambling up from the grassy slope and begin running up the butte behind him. He was too busy clawing his way up the slope, grabbing at rocks, quickly but gingerly lifting his wounded leg over boulders to look behind. They must have paused to loose arrows because they hit the rocks below and above him. One ripped through the slack shirt beneath his arm. As he pulled himself up over the crown of the butte, he yanked an arrow out of his shirt, propped the Winchester on the scree-covered ridgetop, lowered his cheek to the stock, and quickly picked out a coppery figure scrambling up the slope directly below. The Indian's head exploded, blood splashing the boulder behind him. Kuno ducked as a war lance careened toward him from downslope. It split the air a few inches above his head and clattered down the hill behind him. He fired more rounds at moving brown targets, hitting nothing but rock and gravel. He was about to squeeze off another round, but held off. The Kiowas had taken cover behind rocks. They were still moving, he saw, working their way up the butte, no doubt intending to get around him, but doing so as they zigzagged behind boulders, virtually out of sight. Kuno looked around. There was no covering rock within 20 feet. If the Indians got around him, they'd have a clear shot at him. Grimacing, he pushed himself to his feet, and holding the Winchester in one hand, made his way down the opposite side of the butte, where cedars and cracked boulders offered cover. For how long, he didn't know. He was hip-high in deep shit. With his wounded calf, he couldn't run far. He just had to hole up and hope he could pick off the Kiowa as they attacked him one at a time. He scrambled sideways down the slope, limping on a gimpy calf, holding the Winchester out for balance. When he came to the tree line, he paused, sweeping the uneven slope from left to right. On his right, and about 50 feet down the hill, he saw what looked like promising cover and made for it. It turned out to be a natural semicircular bunker of sorts, 4 feet tall, with several stunted trees growing out of the mica-flecked rock. Not bad. After first making sure he wouldn't be sharing the space with any wild creatures like cougars or diamondbacks, he scrambled over the rocks and hunkered down in the bunker. It smelled faintly of skunk musk and was littered with black, ropey coyote scat. Setting the rifle down and biting his lip, he tightened the bloody neckerchief around the wounded calf and peered over the rock wall, sweeping the butte top with his gaze. A brown blur flashed on his right, disappearing behind a nest of cedars. Another man appeared on his far left, the Indian crouching there, his arrow notched, his lime-green bandana whipping in the breeze. Kuno ducked down, hoping he hadn't been seen, and grabbed the Winchester. As he levered a shell in the breech and glanced at the line of empty leather shell loops on his cartridge belt, a sickening thought occurred to him. He was almost out of ammo. Kuno loaded his last six shells into the Winchester. His .45 Colt was already loaded. That gave him 12 shots altogether, more than enough for three white men. But he was dealing with Kiowa, who could duck and dodge like phantoms. He'd have to shoot sparingly. Scooting out from the rock wall, he expended another glance toward the brow of the butte. The Indian was still crouched beside the rock, notched arrow held at his shoulder, raking his gaze along the slope. As the man's head turned toward him, Kuno darted back against the wall, hoping he hadn't been seen. Pressing his back against the rocks, squeezing the Winchester in both hands, he ticked off the seconds. When a minute had passed, he dared another look up the butte. The Indian was no longer at the crest. Spying movement out of the corner of his left eye, Kuno ducked. An arrow fell at his feet. Whipping the rifle up, he saw the Kiowa rise off his knees and scramble back behind a boulder. Kuno's shots kicked up dust and gravel at his heels. A rock rolled down the slope behind him, and Kuno turned to see another Indian skipping down behind a dwarf pine. Kuno fired, then ducked down behind the bunker.
Damn it!
He couldn't hold them off for long. He didn't have enough ammo. Pressing his back against the rocks and listening for movement around him, he decided to kill as many of the surviving three warriors as he could and save the last shot for himself. He didn't want to end up in some Kiowa camp tonight, slow roasted over a hot fire. He rolled his eyes from left to right, watching for movement. It came quickly from his left, the Indian sprinting down the slope at an angle, hurdling a deadfall tree. Kuno aimed too quickly. His slug careened over the jumping Indian's shoulder just before the warrior ducked behind a low hummock about 30 yards away. Turning quickly, Kuno saw another redskin storm toward the bunker, crouching as he ran, obsidian hair stringing out around his shoulders. 10 feet beyond Kuno, close enough that Kuno could see his pitted face and wide, liquid brown eyes flashing fury, the young warrior stopped and drew the arrow back. The brave took Kuno's slug high in the chest. As the brave fell, Kuno felt something plunge into his right thigh. Instantly, his whole leg numbed. He twisted, stumbling and dropping the rifle. The Indian who'd fired the arrow stepped out from cover, knocking another arrow. Kuno grabbed his Colt and loosed three careless shots, shooting out of fury, sheer spite, his adrenaline spurting through every limb, his leg crying out in pain. The Indian dove behind a low mound of mangled juniper shrubs, not even grazed.
Damn it!
Kuno shifted the Colt to his left hand and clutched his right thigh. Around the arrow, blood soaked his jeans, thick and sticky and building in volume.
Ugh.
He squeezed the wound closed around the arrow. His face was sweat-basted, and so was his shirt. Broad, wet swaths down his chest and under his arms. Somewhere he'd lost his hat, and his blonde hair was pasted against his scalp. He was done for. The two remaining Indians had him trapped. Looking around, he saw that he'd dropped his rifle over the bunker wall. He had only his pistol now, with three shells left in the cylinder. Two for the Indians, and if that didn't work, one for himself. He sat there, clutching his wounded thigh with one hand, his pistol in the other, waiting. Time passed, the sun arcing westward. Kuno listened for the Indians, but heard nothing. Apparently, they were waiting him out. He doubted they wanted him to bleed to death. Being Indians, especially Kiowa, they'd want to finish him personally. They were just letting time pass, hoping to catch him off guard. Above and beyond the pain in his throbbing right leg, Kuno felt grave disappointment that his run had come to an end before he could settle his score with the rancher, Evans, in Julesburg. He'd really hoped he could do that one last thing for July. He cocked his head and squinted one eye at the sky. The sun was quartering toward the western ridges. It would be dark soon. Maybe that's what the Indians were waiting for, to get the sun behind them. Then they'd rush toward the bunker with arrows knocked. Kuno would get one. Damn if he wouldn't get at least one. The thought had barely passed before he saw something move on his left side, about 30 feet away. Knowing one could be trying to distract him while the other charged, Kuno looked to his right in time to see a brown blur as the Indian on that side ran behind a rock. Kuno jerked another look left, and the Indian there lifted his head above a pine stump. Then he ducked back behind the stump. Kuno smiled to himself. The man had been trying to attract his fire, wanting him to waste more ammo, but Kuno had resisted.
Forget it, you damn savage! I'm gonna wait until I've got a good solid bead on your forehead, and then I'm gonna blow your brains out.
Just then, the Indian on his right leapt out from cover, running toward him. Kuno leveled the pistol on him. Again, he missed as the Indian hunkered down behind a low scarp covered with leaves and pine needles only 10 feet away. Quickly turning, Kuno saw the man on his left making a run toward him as well. Kuno's second-to-last shot stopped the Indian dead in his tracks, a bloody smear on his forehead just above the bridge of his nose. Kuno turned back the other way in time to see the other warrior coming at him, bolting off his feet in an arching dive, a tomahawk held blade forward in his right hand. Watching the tomahawk's blade winking in the orange light, Kuno lifted his gun. In the back of his mind, he knew he wouldn't get the barrel leveled in time, so he lifted his left hand, trying to block the Indian's blow. Vaguely, he was aware of the Indian's savage expression suddenly slackening. The Kiowa bowled into him like a sack of corn thrown from a supply wagon, knocking Kuno onto his back. The Indian lay motionless, his dead weight pressing down on Kuno's chest. Flat on his back, Kuno blinked his eyes as he looked around.
What the hell?
Hearing footsteps, he tipped his head to peer in the direction from which the last Indian had come. A slight figure hop-skipped down the slope, blonde hair bouncing down from a man's felt hat, a rifle held across her chest. Behind Marlene came the boy, carrying his big Remington in both hands, descending the slope with more care than the girl. They approached until Marlene Stratton was staring down at Kuno, still lying beneath the dead Indian. Kuno stared up at her. Marlene planted one fist on her hip.
If I could have made a shot like that a few nights ago, I'd be $5,000 richer by now.
You all right?
Sandy Hillman hunkered down beside Kuno in the bunker, the boy's eyes bright with worry. He ran his gaze over the wounds and made a face.
That looks bad.
I'll be okay.
Kuno's grin didn't quite make it to his eyes.
Boy, do me a favor and try to run Renegade down. He's on the other side of the butte somewhere. Give 2 sharp whistles. That should bring him.
The boy hesitated, his sweat-streaked face creased with anxiety.
You sure you're gonna be all right?
I'm sure. Go now.
Reluctantly, the boy scrambled over the rock wall and began climbing back up the butte. The girl took his place beside Kuno, switching her rifle to her left hand and raking her eyes over the wounds.
Help me up.
Kuno clutched her arm.
You'll never make it up the butte.
She shifted her gaze from his leg to his face.
We best wait here for Sandy and Renegade.
Kuno shook his head and pulled against her, climbing to his feet.
More engines could have heard the shots.
You'll never make it with that arrow in your leg.
His features bathed in sweat, Kuno sat back down against the rocks.
Christ!
We'll wait for Sandy.
Dig a bullet out of one of your cartridges.
What?
An old trick I learned from my old man when Arapahoes attacked our freight wagons. Dig a bullet out of a shell casing. Hurry!
She ejected a shell from her rifle. Her hands trembling, she accepted his knife and began prying the slug from the casing. Finally, the lead ball jerked from the brass and tumbled around Kuno's legs. Taking the knife back, working quickly, aware that more Indians could be charging down the butte at any moment, he cut off the pointed end of the arrow and split it lengthwise with his knife. He poured the gunpowder from the casing into the crack, making a good 4-inch line.
What the hell are you doing?
Got a match?
Her eyes met his, fear mixing with scorn. He thrust his open palm at her.
Give me a match!
Exasperated, she fished a matchbox from her shirt pocket and slapped it into his palm. He fished out a match and scraped it on his cartridge belt. He glanced at the flame, steeling himself, and swallowed hard. He touched the flame to the furrow he plowed in the arrow. Black smoke filled the air with its acrid smell. At the same time, Kuno gave the feathered shaft a fierce yank, forcing himself to keep pulling despite the white-hot pain as the blazing shaft slipped back through the torn muscle and flesh. The pain was almost unendurable. Still, he didn't stop pulling until the shaft was out. An eye blink after he dropped the bloody shaft, his eyes glazed and rolled back in his head. He slumped back against the rock wall, out like a blown candle. When he woke, Marlene was tying a strip of cloth the same color as her shirt around his thigh. What was left of her shirt lay beside her on the rocks. She was clad only in her loose undershirt, under which her small, pointed breasts swayed. Glancing at his face, she saw that his eyes were open.
The bleeding stopped.
She tightened the knot over the wound.
Cauterized all the way through.
Kuno pushed himself onto his elbows to inspect the wound.
We gotta get over the mountain. meet Sandy on the other side.
No.
Yes.
He grabbed the rocks and heaved himself to his feet.
You're gonna open those wounds again, and then
If we don't get out of here, there's gonna be plenty more savages where those came from.
Brusquely, he draped an arm around her shoulder and hobbled over the bunker's low wall.
There were more Indians around, they'd be here.
We wait a few minutes, they will be.
What?
He stooped to retrieve his rifle, then straightened and pointed a finger to the northeast, beyond the furry, rocky humps of hills and buttes, where a string of riders cantered through a ravine. They were mere horse and rider-shaped specks from this distance, but specks with long hair and feathered lances.
Why do you always have to be right?
She threw an arm around his waist and guided him up the butte. They were halfway down the other side when he saw Sandy sitting his pinto pony on the valley floor. Renegade stood behind him, his reins in Sandy's hands. Marlene's dappled Mustang and the Arabian were tethered to a shrub. The four horses and the boy were watching Marlene and Kuno clamber down the slope, Kuno kicking his bad leg out, using his rifle as a cane.
How you feeling, Kuno?
Kuno paused beside Renegade, pressing his face against the fender of his saddle, biting down hard against the unrelenting pain, fighting off the weakness.
Peachy, help me up.
Sandy quickly dismounted, and when he and Marlene had Kuno in his saddle, Kuno heeled Renegade forward, gritting his teeth as the horse's gait racked his body. He knew he couldn't take much more jarring before his thigh opened up again, but there was no choice. With the Indians behind them, he either rode or died and got the boy and the girl killed in the process. He made Sandy and Marlene ride ahead while he rode drag, keeping an eye on their back trail. He was in no condition for another fight, but if the Indians caught up to them, he might hold them off for a few minutes until Marlene and Sandy made it to Canyon City, which his map had told him lay on the other side of Canyon Pass. They rode another 4 hard miles. Kuno paused on a rise and regarded their back trail, his hand squeezing the pounding thigh wound closed. He thought they'd outdistanced the Kiowa by a couple of miles. Relief washed through him when they finally brought their horses to a stop on a hill overlooking a deep canyon. At the bottom of the canyon nestled the town, a boom town not unlike the others he'd seen. A couple of main drags sitting perpendicular to each other sported tall, false-fronted buildings of new yellow lumber. Beyond lay the log shacks and tents. Reinforced mountain wagons on high iron wheels milled about the deep-rutted streets, while bearded men clad in baggy duck trousers and thick, flat-soled boots tramped about the boardwalks. Signs for drinks, women, billiards, and mining equipment stood or hung virtually everywhere. Exhausted, he lifted his gaze to the scree-covered, pine-dotted slopes around him. Kuno saw the broad swaths of broken rock tailing out from wood-framed burrows. Outside such caves, men picked and prodded the mountain for golden fortunes.
Oh, you're bleeding again. You need a doctor.
No doctor, just rest.
If you don't see a doctor, you'll bleed dry.
All right. Let's try to stay out of sight as much as we can.
In any mining town, they'd find men who thought themselves equal to the task of landing a $5,000 bounty. The wanted circulars bearing his description and rough sketch had been well circulated. He followed Sandy and Marlene down the trail and into the outskirts of the town, making an effort to keep his head up and not draw attention to himself. It was a difficult proposition. The tipping, lunging world kept turning gray before his eyes, and several times he nearly passed out. He was glad the sun had set behind the towering ridges. The purple shadows concealed his face and bloody pants leg. They reined up near a livery corral where the muddy mountain trail emerged from the log shacks and tents and entered the town.
Marlene, Sandy and I'll wait here while you look for a doctor's office.
The girl nodded and gigged her horse down the street, swinging her head from left to right, looking for the shingle of a sawbones. Men gawked at her from wagons and boardwalks. It was no doubt unusual to see a girl dressed in men's rough trail garb in these parts. The only other women were scantily clad in pink or rose satin and black lace, touting their fleshy wares from balconies or boardwalks fronting saloons. Marlene returned a few minutes later, waking Kuno from a teeth-gnashing doze, head tipped over Renegade's neck.
I found a place.
She slipped the reins from Kuno's loose grip and started around the livery barn's rear paddock, filled with mules.
We can get to it from the alley.
Kuno gripped the saddle horn as Renegade rode after the girl's Mustang. Seeing two men standing in the paddock, brushing the mules, and regarding the three newcomers curiously, Kuno lowered his head, gave his hat brim a cursory pinch, and turned away. With $5,000 on your head, a veritable El Dorado to most fortune hunters, the last place you wanted to find yourself was in a goddamn mining town. They rode through the trash-littered alley, the backs of wood buildings on their left, a line of brush sheathing a riverbed on the right.
Sandy, stay with the horses.
Okay.
When Kuno felt Renegade stop, Marlene helped Kuno slip out of the leather and climb a staircase running along the outside of a two-story building. The wood smelled of fresh pine. The thickening wood smoke wafting from the chimneys was thick with the tang of pine resin as well. Marlene knocked on the door at the top of the stairs. A short time later, a short, stocky man with must-gray hair and a bushy gray mustache stood framed in the doorway, frowning. His brown eyes were rheumy. He wore a silk shirt and a wool vest under a bib stained with wine. His breath was stained with the alcohol as well. Breadcrumbs adhered to his lips and mustache, and in his right hand, he held part of a roast beef sandwich, a bite of which he was still chewing.
You, the doc?
The man nodded, swallowing and taking Kuno's measure, deep lines etched around his glinting fish eyes.
I'm Doc Romer. What you got here?
He has two arrow wounds in his right leg.
Marlene wrestled Kuno through the door as the doctor shuffled back.
Looks like he's lost a lot of blood.
Romer eyed Kuno's denims. He shut the door and turned into a small room with a battered roll-top desk, a small coal burner, a couple of Windsor chairs, and a file cabinet.
This way.
He set his bib and sandwich on the desk, and dusting his hands on his baggy trousers, walked into an even smaller room rife with the smell of carbolic acid and alcohol. Marlene followed him, guiding Kuno with both arms around his waist, tripping over his feet.
Get him on the table there.
Kuno was already sagging against the examining table, eyes fluttering, feet shuffling like a drunk's, his pale, sweat-soaked features etched with pain. Marlene gentled him onto the table, then lifted his feet until he was stretched out on his back, sweat runneling his pain-curled cheeks. The doctor produced a curved scissors from a preparation table. He ambled over to the examination table and leaned close to inspect the wounds, squinting and wrinkling his nose. He then began slicing through the neckerchief tied around the wound in Kuno's calf. His halting movements and unsteady hands did nothing to build Marlene's confidence, but she doubted she'd find another Sawbones in the mining camp. Most camps were lucky if they had one, let alone a sober one.
Is this Arapahoe handiwork?
Kiowa.
The doctor removed the bandage over Kuno's thigh and was cutting away the trousers, the scissors faltering on the tough, blood-soaked denim.
He doesn't look like a miner.
He's not.
Marlene knew her cryptic reply wouldn't satisfy the curious doctor. She sagged against the wall, as exhausted as she'd ever been, and tried to dream up a background for her and Kuno, but too weary to think of anything, she let it go. The old Sawbones gave her a curious sidelong glance, then went back to cutting. Kuno was out, eyelids fluttering, head shaking slowly from side to side.
What are your names?
No offense, Doc, but that's none of your business. Just fix my friend up and we'll be on our way.
The doctor glanced up at her, his red nose turning redder.
No reason to get your underpants in a twist, young lady. I was just trying to make conversation.
I'm too tired for conversation.
Are you too tired to give me a hand?
She stared at him.
See that whiskey bottle over there? Pop the cork and force as much down your friend's throat as you can get. I'm gonna have to clean and stitch these wounds and he'll need to be out.
Whiskey, huh?
Marlene reached for the bottle.
I thought medics used laudanum or chloroform these days.
Or cocaine. You know how much that fancy stuff costs and how much miners are willing to pay for medical services? Whiskey works just as good.
A short time later, after Marlene had given Kuno several liberal pours of whiskey, Romer returned with a basin of steaming water and several cloths thrown over his arm.
Our friend good and soused?
Marlene wanted to say that Kuno was nearly as drunk as the doctor, but decided to hold her tongue. Without the man's help, Kuno would no doubt bleed to death or die of infection. Marlene nodded. Romer popped the cork on the whiskey bottle and winked at Marlene.
It is only ethical for a doctor to sample his own medicine.
Marlene sneered as he tipped back the whiskey until his Adam's apple had bobbed twice. Then he lowered it, corked it, wrung out a rag in the steaming water, and set to work cleaning the wound that had turned Kuno's exposed thigh to a puddle of jellied blood and skin the color of an overripe choke cherry. After a half hour passed, Romer put down a crimson rag.
There you go. All done.
You didn't suture the wounds.
Yeah, not going to do that.
What do you mean you're not going to suture them?
Both wounds are relatively clean. I'll put some salve on them and wrap them. That should do.
They won't break open?
If I thought they'd break open, I'd suture them, wouldn't I?
Marlene studied him, angry and perplexed. Drunk as he was, she had to admit he looked and sounded like he knew what he was doing. Still, something bothered her about his not suturing the wounds.
How long until he'll be able to ride?
Romer was wrapping clean white cloth around the calf. His hands were shaking slightly, Marlene noted. The look in his eyes, an enervated perplexity, told her the shakes weren't due to the alcohol alone. He seemed nervous, rushed, in spite of the fact that he'd been here alone when she'd rapped on the door. No other patients awaited his services.
Oh, I'd say a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's too long.
Young lady, your friend's leg has been pierced by Kiowa arrows. If they'd struck the bone, he'd probably lose the leg. Why don't you run along?
What?
He'll spend the night here.
Why?
So I can keep an eye on him. That sweat isn't from exhaustion alone. It's fever. Mrs. Evinrude's boarding house is just over the hill on the south side of town. She's cheap. And if you don't have money, she'll let you do her dishes or empty her slop pails.
Marlene stood regarding the tipsy sawbones skeptically. Romer looked at Marlene, his face flushed.
Out!
Marlene regarded Kuno, uncertain, befuddled, anxious. Looking at the doctor again, she saw a definite subversive cast to his gaze.
All right. I'll be back in the morning.
Then she wheeled, started out the door, and turned back to glance again at Kuno. Then let herself out the door over the stairs. She paused on the landing and looked around. The sun had fallen, cloaking Canyon City in near darkness. Haltingly, she started down the stairs. Something didn't feel right, but she wasn't sure what it was.
How is he?
Sandy moved out of the brush on the other side of the alley and stood gazing at Marlene with concern.
I think he'll be all right.
He's staying at the docks tonight?
I reckon.
Marlene walked to the shadows across the alley as though in a dream, her head down.
What's wrong?
Sandy walked up behind her.
I don't know.
She turned to him, an idea forming itself.
Where are the horses?
Sandy's face showed confusion and alarm. He jerked his head at the brush lining the alley.
Yonder in the wash?
Good.
Marlene grabbed his arm, jerked him down the alley, and led him behind a woodshed.
What are we doing?
Waiting right here.
For what?
Shh.
Marlene waited, her back to the shed, glancing around the corner. Sandy stood beside her, and she hushed his occasional queries and complaints with a brusque hand on his arm or an elbow in the ribs. A quarter hour had passed when the doctor's short silhouette appeared at the bottom of the stairs, wearing a jacket and a bowler. He turned sharply and headed toward the main drag. Marlene squeezed Sandy's elbow.
Wait here.
Before he could protest, Marlene ran out from behind the shed and paused at the bottom of the steps, peering toward the main street. The doctor's squat silhouette disappeared around a store corner. Marlene ran to the corner of the drug emporium, stopped, and edged her gaze up the street. The doctor waited for a grocery wagon to pass, then stepped off the boardwalk. He crossed the street and walked along the north-facing buildings. Weaving through the men drinking outside the saloons, several gaudily dressed women clinging to their elbows. Marlene waited, staying out of sight. The doctor walked quickly, pumping his short legs, not pausing to tip his hat to the ladies. Finally, he strode past a saddle shop, then turned into a saloon, gas-lit bat wings swinging behind him. Marlene's heart quickened. Turning, she ran back to the alley and found Sandy.
Come on, shaver.
She mounted the stairs to the doctor's office, moving fast.
What's going on?
We have to get Kuno out of town.
Why?
I have a funny feeling about that Sawbones.
She stopped at the top of the stairs and tried the knob. The fact that it wasn't locked gave her relief, but it also told her that the doctor intended to return quickly. That, in turn, told her that her suspicions were correct. The doctor had recognized Kuno and had gone off to find someone willing and able to share in the bounty. That was probably another reason why Romer hadn't troubled himself with suturing Kuno's wounds. Why waste time on a dead man? Marlene paused as she saw a man's silhouette standing before the table in the examining room, stooped over, clutching the table as though to a life raft.
Kuno!
Startled, he turned and stumbled, nearly fell.
We have to lie to Shuck.
I know.
Kuno grabbed her arm for balance.
I saw the way he studied me. He's seen a flyer, all right. Damn, I'm tipsy.
Marlene leaned into him, taking his weight. She turned to Sandy.
Bring the horses. I'll help him down the stairs.
You get the horses. I'm stronger. I'll help him down the stairs.
Go! Move!
Sandy turned and bolted out the front door. Marlene draped Kuno's left arm around her shoulders and guided him onto the landing.
Easy.
She guided him down the steps.
I don't want those wounds to start bleeding.
Kuno didn't use the right leg at all. He hopped down each step, one step at a time. When they made the alley, Sandy was standing there with all four sets of reins in his hands.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
Marlene jerked her head toward the main street. The doctor and four other men, tall, broad-chested miners, were heading toward them, walking fast. Awkwardly, Kuno ripped his Colt from his holster and didn't bother aiming carefully. He watched as the five silhouettes scattered and dove for cover.
Mount up and ride!
Kuno grabbed at his saddle horn. Drunk and seeing two of everything, he somehow got his left foot in a stirrup and, with Marlene pushing from behind, pulled himself into the saddle.
Marlene! Fork leather!
Kuno took aim in the general direction of the doctor and his cohorts again. Renegade skitter-hopped in a rough circle. Whipping his head around, Kuno saw that Marlene and Sandy were mounted. A second later, they gigged their horses into fast gallops down the alley, leaning low over their saddle horns. Shoving the pain from his mind, Kuno urged Renegade ahead, while watching the horseback figures of Marlene and Sandy dancing ahead of him, weaving around privies and stacked cordwood.
Get that son of a bitch!
The bullets sizzled over his back, and Renegade's muscles contracted as the slug whined past his head.
Son of a bitch!
He wondered what the world was coming to when even doctors were out for your hide. As they galloped, Kuno gritted his teeth, hoping against hope that his wounds didn't start bleeding again. It was entirely possible, for the doctor had done a rush job, seeing no reason to waste time and energy on a man he was going to soon kill. Kuno was aware of figures pausing along both sides of the streets to observe the three racing riders. As he left the business district and approached the outlying cabins and tents set willy-nilly about the rabbit brush and wild mahogany, he saw a huge man, a literal giant, on a behemoth buckskin horse raising the sledge of his right fist. At first, Kuno thought he was hallucinating, but a second look validated the man's presence.
God damn you to hell! Damn you to rub it off!
He was yelling at Marlene and Sandy. Hearing Kuno's thundering hooves, he turned sharply. Kuno couldn't see his face, only the immense silhouette in the bearhide tunic. But there was no mistaking the voice, even through the thumps and clumps of Renegade's feet.
Lawyers! You fucking son of bitches!
It was Ruben Pacheca. It had to be. Kuno had never met the man, but he'd heard of him. He hoped Pacheca's presence in Canyon City was a coincidence. All he needed was one of the most formidable bounty hunters on the frontier on his ass, in addition to everyone else. At the frayed edge of the settlement, where the trail rose into the mountains, Marlene had halted her horse. Sandy halted his pinto now, too, and turned to watch Kuno approach, slumped in his saddle.
Where are we going? What are we doing?
Kuno checked Renegade down to a walk. He clutched the bandage around his throbbing thigh. The alcohol had dulled the pain, but not completely. It also made his thoughts heavy and muddy. He shook his head.
I don't know. Just ride. Lead the way till we find a place to light. I figure we have a few minutes on them. If they come for us, they'll probably need to saddle horses.
Marlene nodded, then wheeled her horse around, urging it up the slope through pines and aspens. Sandy followed, and Kuno brought up the rear. As he rode, his head hung to his chest. He was only vaguely aware of their serpentine course. He didn't know where they were going, doubted Marlene did, but he didn't care. He wanted only to get somewhere safe and to sleep. Then a bullet flew over his head, and Renegade jerked, lunging sideways.
Keep going!
He turned Renegade off the trail and reined in behind a towering pine. A moment later, he saw the first rider approaching at a lunging gallop, elbows raised high. Trying to swim up from his alcohol fog, Kuno raised his revolver and stared down the barrel. Slowly, the two images of the single rider closed together and Kuno fired. The man tumbled down the opposite side of his horse. The horse stopped, swung around, and headed back the way it had come, nearly colliding with the rider storming up from behind. Kuno picked out the rider's shadow from the enclosing darkness and fired. The man returned fire, his pistol geysering flames. Kuno fired again, but the man had already swung around and was riding back the way he'd come. Looking to the left, he saw Marlene riding up, Spencer in hand.
I think I discouraged him for now.
He gigged Renegade out of the trees. Marlene turned her own horse around, and she and Kuno rode up to where Sandy was waiting by a large boulder on the right side of the trail.
Let's keep moving. As much room as we can put between us and Canyon City, the better.
Marlene took the lead again, and Kuno drooped in his saddle, following, catching occasional glimpses of Sandy riding ahead. Occasionally, when he lifted his head to look around, a narrow path appeared beneath him, winding through deep forest, milky moonlight filtering through the leafy canopy. At one point, he turned sharply left and climbed a steep grade on a narrow game trail. He threaded an escarpment of strewn granite boulders, climbed still higher, and entered a clearing bathed in moonlight and walled with black forest against a violet sky brushed with cream. Kuno's eyes drooped closed. He felt the saddle horn lightly punch his chest.
Let's get him inside!
What is this?
A cabin. What's it look like?
Whose?
How the hell should I know? Looks abandoned, though.
It was then that Kuno spun downward into a hot soup of half-formed images. July was there, beckoning to him across a broad lake cloaked in morning mist. His father drove a freight wagon through a storm of Indian arrows. His mother stood in a barren room, hands clasped before her, a sad expression pulling her lips down as she told Kuno how sorry she was for dying on him. And then there was Corsica, his father's second wife, lying as Kuno had seen her last, dead in a pool of fresh blood, raped and murdered by the hide hunter, Rolf Anderson. Dead as she was, she quirked an odd smile, asking him to add another log to the kitchen stove, for she felt a tremendous chill of a sudden. Amidst all the images, there was the lingering sensation of bathing in burning steam. The moist heat was inescapable, no matter how hard he tried to swim or thrash out of it. Finally, the heat abated. He opened his eyes. He was on a cot in a small, low-roofed cabin. Midday light angled through two sashed windows, revealing the crevices and the stones embedded in the hard-packed earthen floor. A peeled log center post stood a few feet away, hung with traps and chains and braided leather straps. There was a small table and one other cot covered with a rumpled army blanket. Several blankets and a familiar saddle lay on the floor against the wall opposite the door. Lines burrowed into his forehead as he tried to remember where he was and how he'd gotten here. Then the cabin door opened. A girl appeared in a green plaid shirt, blue jeans, and a wide brown belt. The jeans clung to her long legs, slender but with womanly curves. The toes of the boots curled back upon themselves. The sleeves of the shirt were rolled up to her elbows, revealing the sleeves of a shabby gray undershirt. Her dusty blonde hair was pulled back in a ponytail. Her bright blue eyes slanted with feline cunning. Marlene. The name slipped home like a steel tongue in an old belt hole.
About time you're coming around. The shaver and me were going to give you one more day than leave you to the mercy of the grizz that's been prowling around.
How long I've been out?
3 nights. This is the fourth day.
She strode across the room, sat beside him on the narrow, webbed hide cot, and placed a hand on his forehead.
The fever broke last night.
I got a piss like a Tennessee plow pony.
Marlene stood.
Come on, then. The maid's fresh out of chamber pots.
He flexed his arms and pressed his hands against the cot.
Don't know if I can get up.
Sure you can. You need exercise before you turn to stone.
Marlene tossed the two blankets off him, revealing his naked legs, the right one boasting a fresh, clean bandage over the calf, another over the thigh. He made a face as he rose on his elbows.
What's that smell?
The best healing salve you'll find. Yarrow root, pine sap, comfrey, pennyroyal, and star moss. I found it out in the woods, boiled it up outside.
Stinks like hell.
My granny used it on all of us kids' cuts and bruises, and she never lost one. From infection, anyway.
Marlene extended her hand to him.
Are you getting up or are you gonna pee in bed?
With her help, he climbed to his feet, his muscles straining like those of an old man's, but he was happy to note more stiffness than pain. He paused on the other side of the threshold, blinking against the clean mountain light. He enjoyed the cool, dry, pine-scented air caressing his face. It felt damn good to be alive. Looking around, he saw all the horses but Sandy's tied to a picket line in lush grass at the edge of the clearing.
Where in the hell are we anyway?
Somewhere northeast of Canyon City. There's a lake to the east, an old mine to the west, and behind us a rocky cliff. The cabin must have belonged to a trapper not too long ago. Probably driven out by miners.
A few minutes later, Kuno, having finished his business, buttoned up his pants and looked at Marlene holding his arm.
Help me back inside.
Tired?
A little. I'll sleep the rest of the day and tonight, and we'll head out tomorrow.
She guided him back to the cabin.
You're gonna need another 3-4 days before you're ready to ride.
Not a chance. I have to get to Julesburg. Where's Sandy?
Checking our trap lines.
He shuttled her a puzzled look.
I found several traps laying around. We're gonna need trail supplies before we can head out again, and I thought we could sell some blues.
He winced as they crossed the threshold and headed for his cot.
Where'd you learn how to trap?
My grandpappy was a Rocky Mountain trapper back when beaver pelts were still worth something back east. He taught me how to set traps when I was growing up. Figured we might have to go back to it again someday.
Kuno sat down on the cot. As she lifted his legs, he gazed at her admiringly. Pretty, but tough. She'd done and seen it all. She reminded him a little of July that way. At once earthy and sexy, singularly sensual, arousing his deepest desires. She raised her eyes, finding his own eyes on the shirt at which her small, firm breasts pushed, the nipples protruding in a way that tickled his loins. She smiled a smoky, cockeyed smile.
You'll have me again soon.
She leaned down and kissed him sweetly on the lips.
But now you need your rest.